This is the Tom Likas Show.
Women love to say what pieces of shit they are.
Now, from the New Normal Studios in Burbank.
Shut your fucking yap.
Tom Likas.
Thank you for tuning into the Tom Likas Show. From my home studio in the Hollywood Hills, this is where you hear us live. Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 24/7 at tom.show. You can hear us on our free app. Get it at the App Store. Get it at Google Play. Or get it at TomEverywhere.com. That's TomEverywhere.com. Thank you for tuning in. Thanks for being part of the program. We appreciate it. Here we are together again. It's you. It's me. It's a bonus hour of the Tom Likas Show. We do a bonus hour every Tuesday on the Tom Likas Show. And stepping into the New Normal Studios in Burbank, here he is, criminal defense attorney Adam Zay. Adam,
evening,
always
Tom,
great.
Tom, how are you?
All right, what's going on?
Not much. I just bid on your baseball ticket.
You were our very first bidder, and that's great. Good luck on winning. Would be pleased to spend the evening.
Thank you.
Boozing it up with you.
Damn right I'm going to win. No one's going to bid against me. Ha ha. They'll be sorry.
Oh, my. We'll see. I hope not. I'd love to see you win. I would.
Thank you. We'll have a great time.
Absolutely.
So, anyway, you know, Tom, that the law is evolving. It's kind of a living thing. And this evening I'm going to go a little law school on everyone because I want to talk about a doctrine which is evolving, which is actually really interesting, and it relates very directly to something we talk about on this show very often, which is DUI. Now, it's an interesting thing that, you know, DUI, driving drunk, particularly when I was, let's say, a teenager in like the 80s and 90s, there was a big kind of push to make the laws tougher against drunk driving, to make it a more serious offense. There was organizations, MAD, which was Mothers Against Drunk Driving, and other sorts of things like that. And the laws got stricter and stricter. The drinking age, when I was growing up, was 18. And then they made it 19, and then they made it 21. And then there was a big push to make it nationally 21. And President Reagan signed a law to the states that if they didn't make their drinking age 21, then they would lose their federal funding to build highways. And that got everyone in line right away.
And by the way, I don't like to interrupt when you're on a roll like
sure.
this. But let me ask, there's a question I've always wondered about the answer to.
Mm-hmm.
An 18-year-old, a 19-year-old, a 20-year-old, these are adults under the laws of the United States of
That's
America.
That's right.
How are you allowed to engage in age discrimination? How is that constitutional to tell people 18, 19, and 20 that they can't drink?
Well, you know, there was actually an interesting circumstance that existed at one time was that you had to be 21 to vote. And you had guys that were fighting in World War II and in being drafted, actually, and in the Korean War and in the Vietnam War, that were saying, hey, you know, if I'm, you know, getting drafted at 18 or 19, I'm old enough to fight, but I still can't vote. You know, it doesn't seem very fair to not be able to, you know, be involved in the political process and vote when you're 18 or 19 or 20, but still get drafted to fight. And what you say, Tom, is quite correct. It's pretty incredible that you're 18 years old and you're an adult, but you can't, you know, buy alcohol. It doesn't seem very reasonable. And what I remember in high school, this was before any real legalization of marijuana, as we have in some states, or, you know, marijuana for medical use, as we have in California. I remember it being much easier to get marijuana, which was an illegal drug, than alcohol, which was legal. And that's pretty bizarre. And you are right. It seems very unfair to someone who's supposed to be an adult and a full citizen at 18 has to wait to 21 to be able to get a legal drink, obviously, and to go to bars, and I remember it being a big problem in college and so forth, because, you know, when you're in college, they have parties and you want to drink and everything, and most of the people in college are 18, 19, 20, and, you know, they're under the drinking age, which is absurd. But anyway, back to the legal evolving doctrines, there's, you know, a very important aspect of the Constitution, which is the Fourth Amendment. And the Fourth Amendment protects against illegal searches and seizures. Now, people usually relate to this in terms of, you know, the police coming into your house, breaking down your door. They have to have a warrant. You always see that in the movies where the guy says, "You ain't coming in here until you show me the warrant, officer." And that's totally true. And as crazy as things become in this country, we still have our basic protections in the Constitution. And the interesting question that you have to ask in terms of driving is what's called implied consent. Now, when drinking and driving was originally made illegal, and this is true of marijuana today, there wasn't really a standard. And with marijuana, there is no standard of what it is to be intoxicated when you drive. And in other words, you know, how much do you have to smoke in order to have a certain blood level, which is beyond legal. That's not really been worked out. And originally, alcohol was like that, too. And we started to have a standard, which was essentially one drink, which is what they call 0.08. And that's the actual weight, a molecular weight, of alcohol in your blood. And usually, 0.08 can be reached with typically one beer, one drink of hard liquor, or one drink of wine, which obviously is a different quantity, but it has to do with the concentration of alcohol. And you've seen where people give the blow test. I've always told people not to do that. It's a very, very inaccurate machine. And I always say to insist on the blood test. But if you think about the blood test, it's kind of invasive. You know, you have to go to the police station or the hospital, and they literally have to stick a needle in your arm and draw your blood. And then when you talk about a search or a seizure, that is an invasive search or seizure. And that, according to the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, should not be done without your consent. And one of the principles had been, based on all these kind of mother's drunk driving and all these like laws that had been, you know, promulgated to make it stricter and stricter against drunk driving, which was considered a national scourge, and a very high level of concern. And as we've talked about this in the past, Tom, it's essentially turned into a cottage industry where the government and then these other agencies and some private companies giving classes and whatnot end up making a fortune. And Alcoholics Anonymous, which was meant to be a voluntary organization, it was things that people chose to do because they wanted to help themselves, you now go to court and get sentenced to go to AA, and you have to go. And that really goes very fundamentally against the principles.
Which is also, as far as I'm concerned, unconstitutional, because Alcoholics Anonymous is a religious cult.
It is partially religious, that's true. And it's also very fundamentally, if you read the principles and the writings of the founder, Bill W., you know, it was meant to be voluntary. And the idea that a judge is telling you that you have to go to a voluntary thing, and that a thing that has religious aspects, again, like you say, is in some way compelling you to do something religious, which is totally insane. But anyway, there was a Supreme Court case called Birchfield versus North Dakota, and it came out in the summer of this year, June in 2016. And anyone who wants a copy of it, it's not that long, it's not that hard to read. You can find it on Google. Or if you email me, and I'll give you my email at the end of the hour, I will be happy to send it to you, no problem. It doesn't cost anything. And it's a very, very interesting case because it had to deal with this exactly. This Mr. Birchfield lives in North Dakota, and he was pulled over for drunk driving. This is some years ago, of course. And he was asked to give a blood test, and he was told that if he refused, that it would be a punishment. And there's actually a separate law, which is the law of not being able to refuse. So he refused to give a blood test, and he was convicted under that law. And he ended up losing his driver's license and being punished or whatever it was. And this was appealed to the Supreme Court of the United States in Washington, D.C. And you won't believe it, Tom, but he actually won. Seriously. And so what he says is that it is not fair to compel someone to have this invasive thing done to them. Now, I've always told everybody, and some of you guys listen and some of you don't, but I've always said that you don't have to do the eye tests and the field sobriety tests. I have a lot of people tell me, I remember you said on the show not to do it, but I did it anyway. The cop told me he wanted me to do it, and so I did it, and I passed. And the answer is, no, you didn't. That's a completely subjective test, and one way or another, the cop is going to make sure that you fail it. Believe me, okay? He wants to make the arrest, and he is going to conclude that you were unable to do the test correctly. Believe me, okay? But leaving that aside, the cop then wants you to blow into the machine, and that is something that you do not have to do. I don't care what they tell you. You do not have to do it. You refuse to do it. And I've always said what you should say is you want to do the blood test. Now, there are some good reasons for this because, first of all, it's much more accurate. But second of all, by the time they get you to the station or to the medical place, it's going to be another hour or two. You will have metabolized more of the alcohol. And so it's much more possible that when they do the test, if you have alcohol in your system, you'll be under the legal limit rather than over. But what this case changes, this new case I mentioned, Birchfield, is it's saying, and this is kind of a judgment call that you have to make, but if you know that you're drunk, and we're not talking one drink, we're talking multiple drinks, and I have people that tell me that they've had six drinks or eight drinks, or they smashed up the car and they don't even remember driving, or they don't even know how they got there or whatever, it's fair to say probably very intoxicated. According to this new legal precedent, the thing to do is to refuse the blood test as well. Because according to this case, and this is now the law of the land, so it applies to every state. People always say, is this California law? Yes, it is, but it's also the law of the United States in general, is that they cannot punish you for not taking the blood test. They cannot compel you to do it, and there cannot be a separate law that punishes you for not complying. So in other words, the worst thing that could happen to you is you could lose your driver's license for a year. But the idea that you have to give evidence that's, you know, taken physically out of your blood and out of, you know, through your skin and whatnot, and taking your blood out of your bloodstream is something that they don't have the right to do. That's invasive, and that's something you have the right to refuse, and you cannot therefore be charged criminally for asserting your rights in that way. Isn't that something else, Tom?
Yes. And by the way, I was just thinking about something else. You know, the idea that if you do things right, the worst that will happen to you is lose your license for a year. And, of course, many people in Southern California say, how could I live? How could I live for a year without having a license?
It's better than getting arrested.
But, you know, with Uber and Lyft, not only could you continue to go to work and do everything you need to do every day, isn't it cheaper than all of the court costs and all of the time you spend in a courtroom? And wouldn't it be cheaper to just take Uber for a year and return to driving a year from now?
I would say if you had taken Uber in the first place, right,
maybe
you wouldn't have this problem to start with.
You know, as a regular Uber user, up to and including last night here in Hollywood.
Yeah, last night.
I couldn't agree with you more. I went out to Pizzeria Mozza last night, where I had a bottle of just brilliant red Italian wine with an amazing gourmet pizza. It was fantastic. But there was no way I was driving over there and then driving back through Hollywood. There was just no way I was going to do it. So I am a hardcore regular Uber user. And, you know, yes, you should always be using Uber, but if somehow you get pulled over and arrested, or maybe you get a DUI on one of these crazy situations where you had the key in your possession, but you weren't driving anywhere, and then they accuse you of DUI anyway, if somehow you end up accused of DUI, if you end up saying, I'm not taking a blood test, not taking a breath test, blah, 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 and they end up suspending your license for a year, at one time in Southern California, that was outrageous because you have to get to work. And we do not have enough public transportation in Southern California to guarantee that everybody's getting to work from where they live. So now, with Uber and Lyft, maybe it's cheaper just to take the one-year suspension. I don't know what the consequences would be once you got your license back. You know, what does that do to your insurance? What does it do to your driving history? Maybe you know the answer to that, but
right.
It just seems to me that Uber and Lyft would be cheaper than going to court over and over and trying to prove your innocence.
There's no comparison at all.
Yeah.
Now, don't forget, the police can still convict you of drunk driving if there's other evidence, okay? So if you do all the stupid stuff that I tell you not to do, if you talk to them, first of all, did you know, I always say don't talk to the police. Well, if you talk to them, they can say they smelled alcohol on your breath. And that's very common. They always say in their reports, smell of alcohol, slurred speech, glassy eyes, you know. If you don't talk to them.
Won't they say that anyway?
Well, if you don't talk to them, then they really can't. There was no speech. There was no smell. Your mouth was closed.
Right.
Okay? If you do the sobriety tests, which is walking a line, touching your nose, all that BS, they can say that you failed the sobriety test, and they always will. There's no way you're going to pass those tests. Lots of people tell me, I think I passed. No, you didn't. Okay? So you got to remember that there's a lot going on. But in the most broad sense, and this is sort of, you know, I'm giving kind of cruel advice here, but if you literally just keep your mouth shut, you don't talk to anyone, you refuse everything, you don't do the blood test, the worst thing that's going to happen to you is 1 year of not driving, which is cheaper and easier and better, believe me, than getting involved in a criminal case, which is going to cost you all kinds of fines and legal fees and all kinds of other trouble. And like Tom said, whatever, you know, not driving for a year is a pain in the ass, but there's alternatives, and they're going to be a lot less and a lot easier than having to deal with a real criminal case. And that's a crazy thing, but it's true. Now, when you look at the reality of knowing yourself, this is what I'm saying. If you think that you're anywhere in between and you've only had one or two drinks or three drinks even, I think it's okay. I think you can give the blood test, and if you're over the limit, I can help you, okay? But if you want to avoid the whole system and you know you've had too many drinks, I mean, I talk to these guys and they're in total denial. They say, oh, I didn't feel that drunk. Or, you know, that Tom is a classic myth that if you drink a lot and you drink coffee afterwards, it sobers you up or whatever. And that's bullshit. That's not true.
Of course.
The only thing that will help you against, you know, being alcohol and then being sober is time. So if you've had six drinks, you can drink all the coffee in the world. It's not going to make you sober. The only thing that's going to make you sober is hours and hours of not drinking, which is going to then have your liver metabolize the alcohol, and then you'll be normal again. But the reality is, if you're sitting there getting pulled over, I think it's incumbent upon you to ask yourself, wait a second now, let's think about this. I've had six drinks. I'm fucked up drunk. I'm not going to talk. I'm not going to do anything. I'm going to refuse the blood test. And I think in the context of this new case and the way that the law is turning, I think you're going to be okay. And, you know, I'm not trying to suggest that it's, you know, super duper to drink and drive. But if you think about how invasive it has been because of this hysteria of these women that lost children and all this, or carrying on about Mothers Against Drunk Driving and all this, you know, the idea of losing your civil rights. And it really is a loss of civil rights that the government has all these new rights to go into your car, to search the trunk of your car, to pull you over to see if you have your seatbelt on, to look in your glove compartment, to just, you know, have a dog smelling all over your car, just to hassle you. These are all rights that are lost to citizens, and these rights don't come back. And this is a nice thing that the Supreme Court in its current state has ruled that. And it's true. It's invasive to have to give your blood. I don't want to go to a hospital and have some nurse stick a needle in my arm and take my blood against my will. That's ridiculous. And that's something that happens. And there are some videos on YouTube of people in different states that, you know, have to give blood or whatever under these circumstances and didn't want to. And they're not kidding around. The police literally are holding the guy down, and the nurse is jamming a needle in his arm or a woman's arm and making them give blood. And, you know, the person's kicking and doesn't want to do it. That's not a situation you want to have, particularly for someone in the United States that you're supposed to be presumed to be innocent. And here you're being manhandled because, you know, you don't want to give blood. You shouldn't have to. And thank God we have a Supreme Court that recognizes that.
No doubt about it. And I also heard that they're trying to reduce the blood alcohol level to 0.02.
Yes, right. Now, you know, Tom...
0.02!
Let me tell you something. If I'm sitting next to you, Tom, when we're doing the show, and you're drinking a beer, I'm going to be 0.02, okay? Just near someone who's drinking.
If I drank wine last night, and I get up today, and at 2:30 in the afternoon, I go drive to work, I might be a 0.2.
Maybe.
0.02.
I'll tell you this. It's an interesting thing that young people mostly know this. When you're a new driver in California and a lot of other states, they have what they call zero tolerance. So that means that until you're 21, from the age of starting your driver's license, which is 17, until you turn 21, you have zero tolerance. So that means that if you have a 0.01 or certainly a 0.02, you could be arrested for drunk driving. So literally, if you are going to, you know, wine country or whatever in Los Olivos, and you went to one of these wine tastings, and you took one sip, we're not talking glass, my friends, one sip of wine, or two sips, I think you would already be over, because you got zero tolerance. You could register a 0.01 or a 0.02. And as Tom said, it's possible that if you had, you know, let's say quite a few drinks one evening, fair and square, you were at home or you took an Uber home, but then the following day you could feel perfectly fine, and if they were testing you with your blood particularly, they could get a reading of 0.01 or 0.02. So what they're essentially saying is that you should not be driving with any alcohol whatsoever. But what the reality is, and I mentioned this is a cottage industry, is they are just finding a way to have more arrests and more convictions, because this, as I said, is multi-millions and billions of dollars. It is big, big business. If you get a conviction in the modern states today of California, the other big states, for drunk driving, between the fines and the classes and the other things you're going to have to do, it's going to cost you $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, plus a lawyer, plus your insurance going up. I mean, it's big money. And so this is something that, you know, cannot be ignored. And if you're a state and you're broke, you need new revenue sources, you would say, let's lower the tolerance from 0.08 to 0.2 or whatever, and that's going to result in more arrests, more convictions, and literally more money. And so if you think that they're doing this because they're so worried about people, or they care so much about drunk driving and the injuries it causes, that's nonsense. The truth is that it's a beautiful, never-ending revenue source. And I know that in just Los Angeles County, which is a very large county, but even so, there are between 200 and 300 DUI drunk driving arrests every single day. And that's just on regular days. During Hollywood, periods of holidays, it's even double or triple that. Cha-ching.
Yikes. I hate that.
It's ridiculous. That's how it goes, Tom. Thinking about revenue sources for the new normal, you know. Could you imagine having a revenue source like that?
I'm thinking about putting up no parking signs in the lot.
There you go.
And then towing everybody away and cutting a deal with the towing company.
I think that's possible.
Like they're not doing that already.
It's big money, Tom. No kidding around.
Unbelievable. All right, let's take a break. We're going to come back in this bonus hour of the Tom Likas Show. We are here with our friend, criminal defense attorney Adam Sachs. So if you've been accused of a crime, maybe a DUI, maybe a drug bust, they accused you of something... You know, you did, but maybe they can't prove it. Maybe you didn't do it, but they said you did do it.
I did it.
All right? These are the kinds of things that Adam can help you with right now. And here on this show, you're getting free legal advice from Adam. Whatever it is, whatever crime you've been accused of, whatever crime you committed, a crime where, all right, maybe you did it, but they can't prove it. What, you know, they think they can, but they can't. You want to talk to Adam right now. So here's our phone number to talk directly to criminal defense attorney Adam Sachs right now. The number is 901-3000-TOM. All right? 901-3000-TOM. Talk to Adam right now. 901-3000-866.
Stick it in your rack. Let them enjoy it, too. Download the Tom Likas app now. 901-3000-TOM. This is the Tom Likas Show.
It's the Tom Likas Show, the bonus hour. 901-3000-TOM as our telephone number. 901-3000-TOM. Come on, boy. 901-3000-866. Thank you so much for being part of our bonus hour with criminal defense attorney Adam Sachs.
Tom, you're not going to believe this.
What is that?
Someone outbid me.
I believe it, but there's still time.
The nerve.
There are going to be bids. That's going to happen.
Unbelievable.
I know.
So, you know,
now,
Tom,
the bidding's just heating up here.
What's that takeout with that poor guy that got beaten to death by the cops in Orange County?
Oh, we call that Fullerton Police Department style.
Right.
The guy was named Kelly Thomas, but we call it Fullerton Police Department style.
Now, you know, Tom. Oh, there you go. Hard to listen to.
Roll on your stomach.
Now, you know, Tom, I think that's horrific to even listen to tell you the truth.
It is.
The interesting thing, and this has been going on now, and this brought into a racial component, which I certainly don't agree with. But you know that, broadly speaking, the officers that were involved in that situation were all, you know, acquitted. And even that's unusual, because a lot of the times when police officers are involved in shootings and so forth, they just get, no trial, no real discipline whatsoever. And that's something interesting that people have to recognize. You know, I get calls all the time from people that feel they were treated unfairly by the police. And we're not talking shootings. We're talking that the police were rough with them, or the police were unfair to them, or whatever. And, you know, that's a real tough case. You hear occasionally stories about people that got millions of dollars, but generally speaking, that's a loser. That's a very tough thing to win. It's very hard to deal with. And it's certainly something that people have to be aware of, that in particular juries see police and they come in, you know, wearing their uniform or whatever, and they believe them. And they believe that the officer was afraid, or he was, you know, doing it according to procedure. And even if it ended up in a very difficult thing, and they have all kinds of things that happen. There was one in L.A. just in the past few days where the guy had a toy gun and the police officer thought it was real and shot him dead. You know, that officer is never going to be tried for that. And broadly speaking, we've seen the results of things where people reach into their pockets or whatever. And, you know, they were just going for something innocent. Like a vape, gun or whatever you call it, which is not a gun. You know, a vape. What do you call that? What's it? What's that, Gary? Vapor rifle. Yeah. What's the metal one? Anyway, the point is, it was a guy who reached in, and it was apparently just a vapor, and it wasn't any kind of weapon. But this is something that people have to really think about. You know, it's really a factor. One of the bravest people I've seen is Mr. Checkpoint, who has driven into various checkpoints and refused to roll down his window and whatnot. And I got to give him credit, because he ends up getting away with it most of the time. But that's a very tough sort of situation. And it is troubling that, you know, there is a call to give the police more and more powers. One of the things that you were saying, Tom, and without getting into the individual politics, is that, you know, in the debate, Hillary Clinton was talking about various governmental things that she wants to do and programs she wants to make and, you know, to help people and to create jobs and all this. But if you really understand what she's saying, the translation actually is she wants to raise taxes and she wants to make new taxes. If the government's making programs, then they have to be paid for with taxes. That's how the government makes money. And so what people don't recognize, you know, when people say they want, stricter laws, or they want law and order, or they want stricter drunk driving regulations or whatever, what that means in a practical sense is giving the police more powers. And, you know, it's amazing, this thing about, you know, like it was the most important thing in the universe of making it illegal to talk on your cell phone when you're driving, which was all about holding the phone, because apparently if you have a Bluetooth or earphone in your ear, that's okay somehow. I think that the distracting part of talking on the phone when you're driving is talking on the phone, but they made it physical, that if you held the phone to your face, that was the real problem. And so, you know, they made this law, and it's incredible to go to court and to see dozens of people paying $300 or $400 each over this nonsense. But it's just giving the police another ability and another reason to pull people over and to hassle people. And this is something that, you know, you have to really be aware of in our society, because even if most police are pretty good people and just trying to do the right thing, when you give power to governmental agencies, they are going to use that power. If you think about the NSA having this unbelievable ability to crack passwords and to listen to phone calls and to read emails, with all that power, do you really think they're not going to do it? I mean, when people find out that they've, you know, been looking at everything on the internet and everything in the phone systems and everything else everywhere for years and storing it in incredible data centers and so forth, is that so surprising that if they have the ability to do it, that they would exercise that ability? Of course. And it's no different. That's why this case that I mentioned is really wonderful, because it's limiting the power of the government. And that's something that the Supreme Court is very, very important in doing. And, you know, right now we have a divided Supreme Court. It was very interesting. It was doing a lot of cases 5-4 because it was so closely divided. And one of the most prominent judges was named Scalia. And to show you how long they serve, he was appointed by President Reagan, and he recently died. And so, you know, which way the court goes is going to be very influenced now by who replaces him, because who's left on the court is 4-4, and then the new judge will be the one that tips it either way. And of the 4-4, those judges, most of them are pretty old, and quite a few of them are going to be retiring. And so, you know, one of the great issues of this election, which people don't talk about very much, is, you know, who is going to be the president is going to be a big difference of who gets appointed to the Supreme Court. And as you see, a president like Reagan may only serve for, you know, 4 or 8 years, and Reagan was 8 years. But by appointing Scalia on the Supreme Court, which is a lifetime appointment, he was able to influence policy until today, when Scalia finally died, you know, 30 years or more later. And so it is a significant factor, and you see how the analysis of these laws really affects regular people. And I'm really pleased that the Supreme Court said that it's not right to be doing invasive things and going into people's arm and taking their blood. And that's that case that I mentioned. But again, this is something that can change. And the law is, in a lot of respects, kind of a living thing. It's changing and evolving. And it's something that people have to always be aware of, because having rights is a wonderful thing, and our rights can be taken away from us. You know that when they beefed up what they call the Patriot Act and other acts like the traveling stuff with the TSA after 9/11, you know, the TSA has never, ever caught a single terrorist. In the past 15 years, and everything they've done in all the airports in the whole entire country, and all the other things that they do, and all the screening and taking off your shoes, that's all theater. That's all a joke. Because the reality is they have not arrested a single terrorist. And I'm not kidding. That's a fact. And when you look at the ways that we have been inconvenienced and the ways that the government has of screwing with us and looking at our things and checking our mail, I've had a number of people call me who are charged with making terrorist threats. Now, you've never actually had a terrorist charged with terrorist threats, but a regular person fighting with his wife can be charged with making terrorist threats if he threatens her in some way. And we've talked about how easy it is to fall into that trap. So this is a whole different reality, and it's something that's very, very important because people forget how critical their rights are until they're taken away, and then all of a sudden people say, oh, my God, what happened to freedom of the press? You know, something, you know, very devastating actually went into effect this week, which is that ICANN, which is the International Registry, which was under the Commerce Department that was located where I used to live in Herndon, Virginia, was the thing that registers all the internet domain names. And that's something where you type in, you know, CNN.com, and that's actually not what it is. That's actually four numbers. And there's a registry that remembers all of that, and that's basically the foundation of the internet. The internet was an American creation. It had always been under the jurisdiction of the United States, and that was a good thing because the United States basically left it alone. Commerce developed. You have Amazon. You have all the different things that exist on the internet, and the internet was a place of free expression and free speech, which is actually one of the reasons that we have the new normal. I mean, Tom Likas and people like Howard Stern were, you know, on regular terrestrial radio and got hassled by the FCC and got fined. And by going onto the internet, you have a way of reaching many people and broadcasting and communicating, but not going under federal regulation as to what you can say and what you can do and what you can talk about and what you can't talk about. And that is something that was protected by this aspect of ICANN. And what's happened as of October 1st, a couple of days ago, is that Obama, in his brilliance, handed that over to an international consortium, which, you know, if you give it a couple of months, it's going to be headed up by the chair will be Iran and the co-chair will be Saudi Arabia, which is true of the UN groups like the UN Human Rights Council and the Council for the Rights of Women have Cuba as the chairman and Iran as the co-chair. And these aren't exactly countries that care very much about free speech. And that's a very scary thing if they start trying to regulate the internet. For example, they believe that the internet should have rules that you cannot insult Islam, which is their religion, or you cannot insult any religion. And that is something that if they try to enforce that, you're going to have chipping away at the First Amendment. Now, a lot of people say, okay, fine, I don't care. It's not a good thing to insult religion. But the problem is if you start doing that, then the people from South Park can't make the Broadway show The Book of Mormon because it insults Mormonism, and then you're not going to have the ability to question if Jesus was really the Son of God and all these other things. And before you know it, you're going to have a whole bunch of things that cannot be discussed even on the internet. And it's a very scary prospect. And it's something that people should be aware of. And as I said, you don't realize how important the rights are until they're gone.
Got it.
You know about this, Tom. I'm sure this affects you very directly.
Well, we don't know yet what effect it will have, but it is a possibility. Absolutely.
You don't find
I don't know how it's going to play out.
Well, I know, but you don't find the prospect of the internet being regulated to be a direct concern?
I've been expecting that. And by the way, if we did not give away ICANN, they would still, at some point, try to find a way to do that. I do believe, you know, all you have to do is to decide that the internet is a common carrier. The internet is a public utility.
Right.
There's all kinds of ways to do that.
That's
and
true.
I do believe that one day, that whether we did it through giving away ICANN or not, that that is where we were headed. That there's going to come a time. You already have Facebook and Twitter clamping down on what people can say.
By the way, that's a fact, and that's very concerning. Those are private enterprises doing it, and that's something that's very concerning. I saw pictures of the German Chancellor, Angela Merkel, sitting with Mark Zuckerberg, who's the chairman of Facebook, and apparently there was a hot microphone by accident sitting there, and she's telling him, I want you to take down so-and-so whatever that criticizes German policy, in other words, the policy of her government, and Zuckerberg is saying, okay, we'll take care of it. How do you like that?
Right. Well, I definitely think that's where it's going. And by the way, there's great precedent for this. Not they're not good, just big. And You know, what happens is every one of these websites starts off in the Wild West at free speech. And with time, as IPOs are launched and as mainstream advertisers want access to these websites, eventually the free speech gets cranked down.
Yeah, that happened on Twitter, certainly.
Well, and I take a silly website as an example that a lot of people know, Perez Hilton. Perez Hilton became a well-known web figure because on his website he had photographs of people, and then he would draw circles around things, or he would superimpose jizz stains on people's faces, or all kinds of outrageous commentary. But the minute Perez Hilton started getting national advertisers, all that stuff started to go away.
Uh-huh.
And with Facebook, the minute the IPO happened, the minute Wall Street got their nose under the tent, suddenly Facebook started to get very interested in what people were posting.
But how many times have you been in Facebook jail?
3 or 4 times.
Me too.
Yeah. And in one case, it was for something I said over 2 years ago.
Stupid.
So it's become like the FCC. Any day, somebody with an axe to grind could come in and say, you said something 2 years ago and we're taking you off.
Right.
You know? And Twitter. Twitter's about to be sold to a bigger company, possibly the Walt Disney Company. And the Walt Disney Company is not known for trafficking in pornography or cutting-edge a commentary of any kind. And whether it's what they did with stations like KLOS at KABC or what they've done with primetime television, the fact is that Twitter is not going to be the same place if the Walt Disney Company owns it. It's not. So my prediction is that somebody's going to create the new Twitter, some new way of social networking, and it'll be wild, like Snapchat was when it started. It'll be wild, but, you know, government censorship has never been our problem in this country. Wall Street and ad agencies are the censors. These are facts. Let's take a break. We have a caller who wants to talk to you, Adam, and has a very interesting question. We're going to get to that. Adam Sachs is here at our bonus hour of the Tom Likas Show. And if you'd like to talk to criminal defense attorney Adam Sachs, dial in right now and talk to Adam. Here's the number, 901-3000-TOM. 901-3000-TOM. Call right now, 901-3000-8000. 6-6.
Serving the universe from an old laundromat in Burbank. 901-3000-TOM. This is the Tom Likas Show.
It's the Tom Likas Show. At 901-3000-TOM. Our bonus hour, talking to criminal defense attorney Adam Sachs. 901-3000-TOM. 901-3000-8000. 6-6. Adam, how can people get in touch with you?
Well, you can call me toll-free at 1-800-340-7320. That's 1-800-340-7320. You can check me out on Facebook or on the World Wide Web at www.adamlawyer.com. And you can send me an email, which I answer personally, adam@adamlawyer.com.
All right, there you go. 901-3000-TOM. That's our number. Alonzo in Pacoima. You're on the Tom Likas Show with criminal defense attorney Adam Sachs. Hello.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Hey.
Great.
Adam, I had a question for you about actual driver's license.
Okay.
I saw a couple of clips on the internet saying that really, you know, you don't need a license to travel. That the only time you need a license is when you are working for somebody, and you know, commercially. And that's the only time you really need a license. I saw this guy that, you know, and he was showing on the internet that he fought that ticket because he didn't have a license. So they tried to give him a ticket for that. So he went to court, and he was showing the paperwork that they dismissed the case because he didn't have a, you know, you didn't have to have a license in order to travel in your own personal vehicle. And that was kind of like an old law from back in the day. You ever heard about anything like
Well, I remember there was a guy on TV, one of those late night shows, where, you know, they buy like a whole hour, and he was saying that you don't have to pay taxes, and that taxes are artificial, and it's all BS, and the government can't really enforce it. And I remember reading about that guy, that he ended up going to federal prison, you know? So the idea...
That was Irwin Schiff, by the way.
Yeah, is that right? Really?
Yes, Irwin Schiff.
You know everything, Tom. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But anyway, there are people... There was a video lately, I saw it went viral, where the woman was screaming that she was a free inhabitant. And so, therefore, the police didn't have the ability to, like, arrest her or whatever. And, you know, people talk about these things that, you know, technically you don't have to and blah, blah. I think you should get a driver's license if you're going to drive a car. That's pretty minimal. It's not that hard to do. I think it is required. There are definitely a lot of laws that you can run afoul of driving without a license or driving with a suspended license or whatever. And so, I mean, certainly you're right. If you're going to drive a truck or a commercial vehicle, you need a specialized license. But I think that even if you drive a regular car, just in your regular life, you know. Now, I know that for some people that were undocumented, for example, they had problems getting a driver's license, and this was a big issue, and some states would let them and some states wouldn't. But it's my understanding, I think, that particularly some of the bigger states like California and some of the other states are allowing people to get driver's licenses even if they're undocumented aliens or whatever. So that's not even an impediment. And you know that even if you don't get a driver's license, a lot of people go to the DMV just to get a regular ID card. So, I mean, I think it's just a basic reality. If you're going to drive a car and you're going to want to get insurance, you know, that's kind of a normal thing to do. I think it's appropriate to have a driver's license. Why wouldn't you? Is there a reason you don't want to get a driver's license?
No, I actually do have one, but I was just, something that I saw on there that, you know, they actually dismissed it because he didn't have, supposedly it was a law that, you know, the government doesn't need to, you know, license you in order for you to travel. So
right.
It's kind of like,
you're right about one thing. I mean, certainly the right to travel in the United States between the states is protected by the Constitution. There was a time when, during the Great Depression, where people were going from state to state looking for work. And so they were coming to some of the states that were a little, you know, doing a little better, and they were trying to get work there. And so some of the states tried to prevent people, and I'm not talking about any kind of immigrants or anything, I'm just talking about regular American citizens, they tried to prevent them from crossing state lines because they didn't want to have to deal with their problems because they were unemployed or whatever. And the Constitution, you know, there were cases, and it showed very clearly that you have a right to travel among the states of the United States without papers. That actually comes up in checkpoints. I don't know if you've seen this, but we have these in California where they will stop people. We're not talking at the border. We're talking in the country, in California, in San Diego area and so forth. They will stop people in cars and say, are you a citizen? Can I see your ID? And I've seen a lot of videos where the people refuse to cooperate. And they say, look, I'm already in the country. I don't want to show you. You have no probable cause to be pulling me over, and I'm not going to show you anything. And even if you speak with an accent or whatever, they have no right to bother you in that way. And it's strictly voluntary to cooperate. And so technically what you're saying, you know, in terms of the right to travel, that is correct. But if you're operating a motor vehicle, like a car or a motorcycle or whatever, that takes it to another level. And generally speaking, those are regulated. And as you see, there are a lot of rules about seatbelts and not talking on the cell phone and not drinking and driving and safety and registration and insurance. And so I think it is relatively established that you need to have a driver's license. I actually volunteer as a judge. I actually do that part-time in traffic court. That's something that lawyers can do to, like, kind of give back to the community. And I have had people come in with all kinds of crazy stories. And if the guy sounds, you know, relatively sorry or whatever, I dismiss his case a lot of the time. So if I had a guy come in and say, well, I didn't really have my license and I don't know and I thought I didn't need it, you know, I might consider giving him a break rather than zapping him with a $2,000 fine if I feel bad for him, you know. And so that may have been what happened to that person you mentioned, where the judge just kind of felt bad and let it slide because he wasn't exactly killing anyone. But I think that generally speaking, you have to follow the laws of the country if you want to have a fairly reasonable life and not get hassled too much.
Okay. Yeah, well, cool. I just, you know, was wondering about that because you were bringing up, you know, the deal that, you know, once you got your license suspended for a whole year, you know, I thought that that was some technical thing where you could still drive. But
well, okay. There are some. No, no. Okay, since you mentioned that, mm-hmm. there are some principles, and this relates to people that get DUI arrests and also DUI convictions. That, you know, particularly if you have to drive to get to work, there are some exceptions that the DMV will make for you with what they call SR-22, where you can get the right, even though your license is suspended, generally speaking, for pleasure or whatever, you can get the right to drive to, from, you know, your house to work and back, because that's something that you need in order to, like, you know, make money and live. And the government will give you a break and let you do just that. Now then, you know, in that situation, you can't be caught driving around to your friend's house. You're supposed to be allowed to drive to and from your job. And that's something that they want to keep you employed, so they don't want you to become, you know, a bum or whatever. So they will give you that exception sometimes, and I've helped people do that. So you're right about that.
Would you be able to get that exception in that case where you refuse to do the alcohol blood test?
Yeah, I'd say it's a possibility. Not a lock, but a possibility, yeah. I think that could be so. Because that's something where the government, they don't want to disrupt your life where you end up being unemployed. You know, they want you to try to keep your job and, you know, made a mistake and correct it rather than, you know, get yourself completely destroyed and lose your home and your family and starve to death, you know. So, yeah, I think it's possible.
They want to keep you paying taxes.
Damn right. You're damn right. Government wants taxpayers, you know. So that's definitely true. You're right about that.
That's right. If you don't go to work, you can't pay your taxes. No, Alonzo, thank you.
That's the prime directive. Appreciate here in the United States, Tom.
Absolutely. Adam, how can people get in touch with you? One more time.
Definitely call me toll-free at 1-800-340-7320.
There you go. Adam Sachs, by the way, if you missed your opportunity to talk to Adam, don't worry. There'll be another opportunity. Adam is here every Tuesday for a bonus hour. You can always join Adam at 6 p.m. Pacific Time, 9 p.m. Eastern Time.
Stick it in your rack. Let them enjoy it, too. Download the Tom Likas app now. 901-3000-TOM. This is the Tom Likas Show.
From the New Normal Newsroom, it's news for guys. I'm Gary. He's Dino.
Oh, yes.
This Tyson Fury story is fascinating. The world heavyweight champ says he's been on a cocaine binge ever since he got the title. Apparently, he's got some manic depressive issues. It's an unbelievable story, by the way. I saw something on, I think it was on HBO.
But what's odd is over the last 4 months, he's been snorting cocaine, drinking daily, and getting fat as a pig. That never happened. Didn't happen to me, though.
Well, when you're snorting cocaine, what are you saying? You don't gain weight?
No. As a matter of fact, I got to go back.
Nothing stops you.
That's how you know the amount I'm actually doing by my size.
Right.
By the way, he beat Klitschko last November. And Vladimir is, you know, no small cookie. That dude's a big dude.
Vlad's a monster.
I mean, Vitaly, too. I mean, the Klitschko brothers are crazy, but...
yeah, but this dude comes from the family of gypsies and shit. His father was a bare-knuckle fighter, like real deal.
Old school.
Like 100% old school. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a fascinating story. And then he finally becomes, you know, world champ, beats Klitschko, and then just goes on a coke and drinking binge.
And?
And do you see a problem?
And?
Yeah.
Yes.
Pepsi is being sued for exaggerating health benefits of that naked juice. Are you people drinking that kale blazer and all these other things? It says there's no sugar added, giving you the impression that it's a low-calorie drink. It turns out that, like, the pomegranate blueberry juice contains 61 grams of sugar, which is 50% more than a can of Pepsi.
God. So you'd be better off drinking the can
right.
of Pepsi.
Well, I mean, I'm sure it's got other benefits, but...
I'd like to kale blazer it up now.
If you were looking to lose weight, and that's what, you know, no sugar added is referring to calories, you would think, well, hell yeah, I'll do the pomegranate blueberry. But you should have stuck with that Pepsi.
Oh, believe me, I see those naked juices. I'm fooled, too, because I thought they were good for you. That's why I avoided them a lot of times. Yeah.
Right, the naked juice.
Juice,
I said. A former teacher at a charter high school in Memphis, a male teacher, arrested after he's accused of sending sexual text messages to a 15-year-old male student. That's Donald Emery.
Yeah.
26 years old. It's not a good situation.
When the school district was made aware of the accusations against Don Juan, they took swift action and removed him from the school, even pending an investigation. They just went and erred on the side of caution. Yeah. Of course, our friend is innocent until proven guilty, and we're going to find out.
Mm-hmm.
The boy's father filed a complaint with Memphis police, and that's when all hell broke loose.
Right. And in the UK, a teacher's assistant had sex with a pupil after being pestered by students who thought he looked like he was a member of One Direction.
Yeah. I'm glad you didn't say, is it Zayn? I don't know how to say the kid's name.
Oh, Zayn Malik.
Yeah, him.
Yeah. Or is it Malik? Who even knows?
I don't know.
By the way, The teacher's name is Hamid Badi.
Badi. Hey, listen, Badi.
Badi.
Hi, Badi.
Plenty more news for guys.com. Of course, you can find our podcast at GaryandDino.com from the New Normal Studios in Burbank. We're back to the Tom Likas Show right after this.
This is the New Normal.
Je ne parle pas stupido.